ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sports coverage of the NRL Premiership.
NRL Saturday.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
This one from Luca. Being negative is not usually my go. That's true, Luca. But how do we expect more players to come out as gay and bisexual when we have entire teams refusing to wear pride round gear? And let's face it, some huge regions in our game, homophobia built into their culture. Well, you're right, Luca. That's definitely not normally the tenure of your text messages, but it's worth bringing up because watching Kane Evans this week really broke my heart. Mm. Thinking of the internal battle he had, and it, just as a human being, it makes no sense to me that anyone's got to go through that battle about the preferences they've been born with. But the fact he went through that as a big, tough front rower in the game, and now that he's on the other side of the game, and obviously still dealing with those demons, but now felt strong enough to tell everyone his sexual preference, I found really moving. And if it inspires anybody to get through that internal battle in their lives, God, thank God, goodness he's done it. But yeah. Wow, what a battle.
Absolutely. And, you know, the battle, it's twofold. He was hiding part of himself and then having to lie about it to try and, you know, maintain an image that wasn't his true self. So it was so layered what he went through. And the fact that he actually spoke about it so openly, and it was very raw and it was very honest, I think it is definitely his speaking out is going to actually save people's lives. And it's not just about his sexuality. It's about all of the struggle that he had with identity and how it made him feel and how it impacted his life. And, you know, I think my heart really broke when I heard the three goals that he had in life.
The third one especially.
You know, like that was horrific that he felt like that was his only way out. And, you know, I applaud him for speaking up and I applaud him for having that interview with James Bracey and sitting down and being open and honest. And I applaud the Roosters for recognising that they can help in this situation. And I applaud them for afterwards also saying, we probably didn't do enough and we could have done more. And as a game, we need to look at doing more and being more inclusive in that space so that people don't have to go through these awful struggles on their own and feel like they have to hide pieces of themselves to fit in.
Louis, can you take me into a men's NRL dressing room? And I know for a fact that you don't care what, you know, preference people have. I know that. But from a rugby league perspective in 2026, I know you haven't played since 2018, would it be an issue?
No, definitely not. It wouldn't. But I'd love to have the ask Kane Evans now. Now, after coming out and feeling the way you feel and the support that you've got, do you wish you did it earlier now? That's my question to him, because I sit there and go, I think there's a lot of people that still be out there that have got those tendencies that are, you know, that are gay, but that just don't know how to come out with it. I sit there and think
The internal battle he described would be thousands of people would be living with that as we speak.
100%. Yep. Absolutely. And I agree with that. But I'm telling you now, as a person myself, I've got mates who are gay. Mm. Get along with them unreal, right? I don't think there'd be a problem with it. I don't think any of the boys, if anything, the boys would get in there, get behind you, and then it'd be, you know what it's like in change rooms. The banter would be crazy. You know what I mean? So, in a good way. So, it's just tough because I think no one else has done it. There's been Ian Roberts and Kane Evans, you know.
Well, I remember talking to Bob Fulton. I was working with him at the time when Ian Roberts came out.
Yeah.
And Ian Roberts was one of the toughest
men in the world.
Players ever.
Yeah.
So, we're talking now 30 years ago where attitudes generally in society may have been different to what they are now. But him saying back then, not one player in this dressing room has an issue with Ian Roberts. So they all embraced him and, you know.
Mate, I'm telling you.
I'd like to think that's the way.
There's so many guys that we hang out with that are gay, and they'll tell us on the side, but they won't come out and say it publicly. I do believe for it to be more to come out in the NRL, you need more players to come out and own it. Mm. And that's the hard part, though, is that we don't know what they're going through. We don't know what they're thinking. And usually when you've got a drama or a problem, not just in that, you always think that it's bigger than what it actually is. You know what I mean? So the worry, you sit over here and you worry about all these things, but it's actually not as big as you think. But getting it off your chest and saying it, that would be the hard part. So
you think about it the other way. Sorry, Ru, you coming out now at 42 and saying, by the way, world, I'm straight.
Yeah.
Like, no one should have to go through that.
No, correct.
No, and this is the thing, like, he shouldn't have to feel that way. But it's so unfortunate. But why it's so difficult is all of this inbuilt shame that he spoke about as well. That's why it makes these conversations difficult, and it makes that ability to open up so hard. And you could see how visceral his response was when he was saying, trying to talk about it, and he was saying, this is my worst fear. I'm actually living my worst fear right now. And talking about it was his biggest thing, biggest fear, actually admitting it out loud. And then did you guys see that smile of relief on his face? Like, he actually looked like he could smile properly for the first time in his life. And, yeah, like, I could just see how it made him feel to be able to open up about that.
Yeah, my biggest part on that is that having to live with that for however long is just mind-blowing. You shouldn't have to. And I swear to you, anyone out there listening, even if you're a player, the sooner you come out, the better your life is. And you just got to do it, because I'm telling you, the worries are a lot bigger than what you think. It's all built up a lot more in your head than it is on the outside world perceived. That's my theory.
It does also depend. Like, I've had people close to us who have been reluctant to because of a family situation.
Yep.
You know, there are a million reasons why they don't feel comfortable doing it. So I do sympathise with them. But MC, it was a big story. You just want to give him a big hug.
Yeah, for mine, it's twofold. I'd love to get to the point now where, Andrew, you said it's a big story. I would love to get to a point where it's not a story. Like, we're just, okay, cool, move on. Like, that's not disrespectful to Kane, right? It's because of what he's going through. But I'd love to get through a stage where we don't care or talk. Like, it's just fine. Like,
it's part of it, right?
You know, that's what I'd like to get. And to Louis' point around, and this is what Trent Robinson spoke about so well, like, Trent Robinson didn't want to hear praise. He wanted to know why Kane didn't feel comfortable enough, a guy that was inside their four walls for so long, not to have that conversation, you know, a decade ago. And I think that was a real sensible approach, because when I sit there and reflect, I think that's the number one issue.
They're the answers.
That's what needs to be found. And, you know, I thought Trent Robinson handled himself really well off the back of that.
Well, as in society or family structures or friendship groups or at school or at university or in the office, whoever's dealing with it has got to feel safe that they can come and be their true selves, no matter what industry it is or what their circumstances are. So, Luke, I appreciate you bringing that up on the text line. Mary the Rabbit says, team, we all feel for Kane Evans, and I don't understand why the Matildas and women's sports teams don't have the same difficulty with sexuality. What do you think, Roo?
Actually, we were just talking about this off air, and I feel like women's sport handles that quite well. And very open about discussing that and making it a very normal part of sport. And I think that we do that very well. And that's ideally, we'd like to, even for that, to increase in that space as well. We just want it to be something that it's, you know, people don't feel like they have to hide that shame and guilt, and, you know, continue to work together to provide safe spaces and hold space for people to be their true selves.
Is it me or rugby league always forging ahead on these social issues? Just name an issue and rugby league is having that conversation, says Dan in Brisbane. It's why I love the game. I think that's true these days, Dan. Yeah, I do. I think that is a great part of the game, but it hasn't always been thus. Luke's right.
No, but we learn.
Yes.
Well, I think the good thing is we learn from things that we don't do well, and we try and be better.
Yeah, that's true. Luke's right. It's no big deal these days. No one is bothered if someone is gay. Well, I wish that was true, but that, you know, that's not always true. It should be true, and I think the vast majority of people could care less.
Yeah, Luke was speaking about in a team environment.
Yes, that's right.
And your teammates are going to love you and support you and help you regardless. It is outside noise that makes it more difficult.
Yes.
And I think we can all agree that that noise is incredibly disturbing at times, and I can understand why some players are uncomfortable.
So just on that then, does the women's game, there's been a lot of talk about it. Do they get, like, outside noise when they're, at the game, crowd? Do people yell out, stuff like that?
At NRLW games, not so much. But, yes, the outside noise does creep in, and there is some disgusting sewer-like comments that are directed towards female players.
Yeah, right.
Because of their sexuality or just because they're women. And, unfortunately, it continues to this day. So we still have a lot of work to do there, and we continue to forge ahead and make, hopefully, try and get people to make better decisions and open their minds a bit more.
How would these foul-mouthed imbeciles know?
I think
they're watching Instagram prowlers?
Yeah, I dare say they probably are. But also, they like to use it, like your sexuality, they like to use it as a slur, which I don't understand why it would be like considered a slur, but that's what they like to throw out there. And that's why it's disgusting and disturbing. And, you know, we want everybody to be better. And I think as a game, we do very well at trying to help push these social issues and help change those conversations and make better people at the end of the day.
Rugby League is on your radio.
NRL Saturday on ABC Sport.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Well, what about the Finns? They were up last night, 48-10 winners over the Sydney Roosters up in Brisbane. A dominant performance by the Dolphins. They are in great form and their attack is so potent. ABC Player of the Year points last night from Billy Moore. Three went to Isaiah Katoa, the halfback. Two to star centre Herbie Farnworth. And one to Dolphins hooker Jeremy Marshall-King. I think that's now five games in the season for Jeremy Marshall-King. He's made a heck of a difference and he's on the line. G'day, Jeremy. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate.
Mate, this team is on some sort of a roll. I know the Roosters didn't have some origin players, but you guys without the Hammer and Tom Flegler and Finafuiaki, so you had to dig deep, and that attack just as potent as ever.
Yeah, I think that's a big strength of ours is our attack. And, you know, we're missing quite a few players, but I think for us, we've got quite a good depth and, you know, young players that come in and do a job. And, you know, Tavita, he's one of the young players and yeah, really stepped up last night. And Trey Fuller, you know, he's always at his best. And, you know, it's hard to not have him in the team when you got Hammer. But, yeah, you know, it's good to have depth in our team.
Every time you watch him play, you think, how can he not be a regular? He's that good, Trey Fuller. So is Jack Bostock. And the two of you have made such a difference since returning in the last 5 or 6 weeks. And today he's been rewarded with a call-up to New South Wales in State of Origin footy with Casey McLean's withdrawal. Tell us a little bit about Jack Bostock and how you think he'll go at Origin level.
Yeah, I reckon he'll kill it. You know, he's a big body. You know, he'll suit his game to be in Origin. And, you know, I'm just so happy for him to be able in camp. I only just seen that probably half an hour ago that he's gone into camp. He hasn't really mentioned it, but yeah, pretty exciting for him to be in a camp and get that experience.
One player that was in camp with the Blues early in the week was Isaiah Katoa, and then he came out and killed it again for you guys. How do you just marvel at his growth and development at times?
Yeah, like, you know, he was wasn't in all week till captain's run, and you know, we're pretty much not expecting him to come back, but you know, we know what Izzy can do when he comes back. You know, he's still a young player, confident, great kicking game, and, you know, it showed last night.
What about yourself, mate? Obviously, that injury to start the season, you know, back starting last night and starting to get back into the groove a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just I've kind of had that setback with my knee, and it's just good to get back in the team and playing consistent footy, and it helps, you know, when you got good players around you as well, and you know, you're going well, six on the trot, and, you know, first time ever for the Dolphins, and hopefully we can continue with that.
Sitting in the top four now, Jeremy, and with a real, you know, arrow pointed in the right direction. You've been part of the Dolphins since the start, and in these few years, it looks like you're by far and away your best chance not only to make finals footy, but make a serious dent. Is that how you guys are feeling?
Yeah, I definitely can feel it. I think, you know, the biggest thing for us was injuries the last couple of years, you know, missing key players. And but, you know, I think we only probably got Jake Abrolli that's injured at the moment. So I think our best chance is this year, and hopefully we stay injury-free. But, you know, the boys are pretty confident. We've got a great connection through the group, and it shows on the field and our results.
Aside from injuries, where has the greatest growth been in the side this year compared to last year?
Oh, I think just our team's sort of not changing too much, and you know, the connection we have, especially in our spine, I think that's a big key for us, but also our middles as well. You know, we're, you know, really taking a big involvement into our D, and that's something that we wanted to work on this year, because, you know, last year we were first in the attack last year, but I think maybe we were like 13th in defence. So a big key for our focus was our D, and it's really been showing.
Can you speak a little bit to Cody Nikorima and the impact he has in the group? When he's not there in that team, it doesn't seem to click quite as well. Isaiah Katoa doesn't seem to play quite as well. He obviously has an enormous impact. Tell us about Cody Nikorima and what he does for you guys.
Oh, mate, he's a great impact when you have him in our team. And, you know, he's skillful. He's not the biggest guy, but he just knows the right plays at the right time. And, you know, it shows him as a player. You know, I don't think he's signed next year, and hopefully we can get him signed as soon as possible because he's a big key of our team and our spine as well. You know, we don't want to lose him. He's got great experience as well. So, hopefully we can sign him pretty fast.
And just finally, Jeremy, you're going up against your bro next week, West Tigers coach Benji Marshall. I don't know where there'll be banter between the two of you. He's coming off a 68-0 loss and you guys are on a roll. So you're coming at it from vastly different perspectives. Will there be much chit-chat?
Nah, not really, mate. Never is. We try to keep to ourselves. Now he's got a job to do as a coach and got a job to do as a player. And just got to focus on ourselves. And, it's going to be tough. You know, they're a great team, Tigers. This sort of injuries have probably set them back a little bit. And, we know they're a good team and we're going to be at our best.
Sounds like a brother who loves his brother but would like to inflict a bit more damage on him at the same time. Yeah, that sounds about right. Hey, Jeremy, great to see you back playing such good footy, and likewise, watching the Dolphins is a treat. Mate, continue. Thanks for joining us.
Nah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can't touch this.
Time to find out all the latest rugby league news
and speculation.
Here's Michael Carayannis with MC's
Hammer Time.
Michael, what do you got?
Yeah, so Josh Papalihi here, extended for 12 months at Canberra this year, but if he wants to play on in the NRL, he won't be at Canberra next season. So Canberra have made that decision that Josh Papalihi's time at the Raiders is done at the end of the season. Obviously, sidelined with that calf injury at the moment. He was close to joining the Super League last year, but opted to remain in the NRL. It's my gut that he does want to play on, whether that's at another NRL club or in the Super League, I'm not sure.
How old's Big Papa now? 32, 33?
Oh, could be ish. More, 34.
Okay.
33, 34, I think.
See, they need him back Canberra, don't they, for the remainder of this year?
He's 34. Yeah, just turned 34. It definitely need him back, and I still think he's still of NRL quality for a club.
Do you think he'd be picked up somewhere else?
I think he would, but I don't know if... I wouldn't be going to another club for 1 year. When you sit there and you've played for Canberra for so long and you've just got this stature of... I'd be going over England.
A couple of years in England, mate.
Yeah, that's what I'd do. But, I mean, I can only talk from my experience of what I'd do. But if he's got the drive and wants to go to another club and prove himself and use his leadership and try and win one more grand final before he goes...
And this is a guy set in his ways. His favourite show remains Home and Away. He's still never gone on a holiday.
Well, there you go. And so if he goes to England, easy travel.
He's never been to a concert.
Heaps of concerts in England.
Well, there are, but there's heaps in Sydney too.
Well, that's true. But Sydney, it's a three-hour drive. There's not really probably not much in Canberra.
There'd be enough. There'd be music in Canberra at some point.
No, that's true.
Anyway, all right, Michael.
Next. Yeah, the Warriors are desperately searching for an outside back before June 30. Obviously, the Roger Tuivasa-Sheck season-long ending injury has started to test their depth at the moment. So they've been ringing clubs trying to see if there's anyone that would be available. But it's only for the rest of the year, so that's the complication around it because of, they don't want, because they've got Grant Anderson, Will Warbrick coming next year, so they don't need anyone beyond this season. You know, someone like Tyrell Sloan, if he's out of favour and wants to go to the Warriors for the rest of the year, that might look...
Chance Nickel Klukstad coming back soon.
They do, yeah, but they're definitely looking before June 30, which is only 2 weeks away, to land someone.
I'm thinking, though, of the injuries they've had in that back line, and you still think they've got Tane Tuipiki, who's right up there in the upper echelon of these young fullbacks we speak of. Dallin Watney-Jelezniak is on try-scoring fire, and so is Alfiano Cam-Pereira.
Yeah.
They've got incredible strike. All right, and finally...
Jermaine Osaka had that finger injury last night. I think he's going to have surgery on that finger. Roos looking at point. I can't see anything, Roos.
Your screen blanked out.
I just blanked it out. He's been in for surgery already.
Yeah, okay.
And
there you go.
They say that he's going to be back for next week.
Yeah.
Jeez, okay.
It was a minor procedure.
Done and dusted. They muck around there, though.
In and out.
He's a huge
like
part.
A fiddler's elbow.
He's a huge part too, isn't he?
Mate, awesome try scorer, great finisher, does a lot of work out of the backfield. Goal kicking is outstanding.
He's
a big pickup for Melbourne.
Yeah, he's he's going to do so well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Basically,
he's already doing well.
Coming in for Will Warbrick, that's a win for the Melbourne Storm.
ABC Sports coverage of NRL Saturday.
Rugby League is on your radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
I'm Andrew Moore, the Roo and MC, and Luke, just want to introduce ourselves. And on the line, we have the New South Wales State of Origin captain after a reasonably dramatic day, I guess. Isaiah, yeah, good day, Isaiah. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, not without its little hiccups, but ultimately on the way to Melbourne in about an hour, so
It'll
be good to get down there.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. That's going to be fantastic on Wednesday night. Later in the show, actually, I'm going to speak to Rod Wishart. It's been 30 years since New South Wales in 96 won the series 3-0, but they went through the entire three games using only 17 players. Isaiah, it's what you've just been going through in the last week. Hard to believe.
Yeah, no, I don't understand how they've done that, particularly this time of the year. But ultimately, we won't be in the same boat. So it was to be at our ones in game one. And then, obviously unfortunate for Casey that, the quads pulled up no good. So extremely disappointed for him, but it gives Mark a wonderful opportunity.
And just on, Casey McLean is out with that quad injury. You've been with him throughout the entirety of his young career. You've seen him evolve. He struggled last year, like so many of you did at Penrith, and evolved into a magnificent player by the end of last year. This year he's been unreal. And in his appearance for the Blues, he was unreal. What have you seen from Casey that might be different from previous years?
Well, I think it's just he's just growing. Like he's still, he sort of pinch himself. He's only 20 years old. So last year was his sort of first full year in first grade. He was 19, so he was learning lessons like a lot of us were through uncharted waters, to be fair. So I just thought the way he handled that, and then the way he performed this season has been outstanding. He's obviously come on with a lot of confidence, and then I think that sort of showed in the Origin. Like, you don't think you're going to get on, all of a sudden you put yourself on the wing, come in with sort of all hands on deck with about 20 minutes to go, and his first sort of touch was him attacking the ball, coming up with a play, and then he just continued to do that for the last 20 minutes. So ultimately got given an opportunity there to start centres, and deservedly so, but just disappointed. Obviously, it was a bit of a hampered week for him from the start. He had the ankle issue at the start of the week, but then it was his sort of first session ready to go today, and his quad's pulled up no good. So he's obviously gutted, so just trying to get around him as much as I can.
Isaiah, mate, first of all, congratulations on your form. It's been outstanding. I love watching you play and the captaincy of the Blues, amazing. But what's been different, I suppose, going into this camp, camp two, to camp one?
Yeah, well, you've obviously got something you can look back on and see where you've gone wrong, whereas for game one, it's sort of new combinations. Sort of just trying to figure out how you want to play, whereas obviously game two, you can sort of look back on video, review it, see what they were doing, doing well, little areas where you can exploit as well. So that's probably the difference. And they'd be doing the same thing as well on their side. So you'd like to think you improve with your performances, and we will need to. So it's we're obviously disappointed with our start last game, but love the fight and super proud of that, and obviously give yourself at the back end to make a play and Teddy comes down with the ball, so super proud of that. But we understand our best footy is still in front of us, and the start's a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you guys look at the start in the first 20 minutes when you went into camp and how you fixed that up? And obviously Queensland played the first 40 minutes, probably the best 40 minutes you could play in Origin.
Yeah, we probably allowed them to do that too. Like I think we completed, we dropped the ball sort of just cold in the play, the ball sort of five or six times, I reckon, gave away a penalty, six again, sort of just had no field position. So they probably, rightly so, felt like they were on top and sort of dictating terms. I thought our bench did a wonderful job of sort of coming on and sort of changing that a little bit. Hudson scoring just at the back end of the first half sort of steadied the ship a little bit, but then just love the way we're able to sort of keep attacking. Like we've been in the position where we've gone down to 12 a couple of years ago, and that was for 73 minutes, and the other team can still hold their hands up, and so you've still got to play football. And I just thought, we had players attack that period really well. So, ultimately, there might have been a bit of luck involved if they went down to 12, but you've still got to go out and win it, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah, he did a great job in that last 23 minutes. It was amazing. Now, what about the combination between Nathan Cleary and Mitch Moses? How's that going at training at the moment?
Well, it's been good. They got to do a lot of that last camp, and it was just at the back end of that G2, the 2 days out from the game, that obviously Mitch pulled up no good with his hamstring. So we've been out for the whole first campaign, whole first week together, and then now they've looked good today, sort of picked up where it left off. But we're very lucky we've got Ethan there to sort of fill that spot if need be. But no, Mitch pulled up fine. They looked really good at training today. So, looking like that'll be fine.
How did it actually play out with Casey this morning? When was it early in the session, and how did you know it was severe early?
It was pretty early. It was in our warm up, starting to just get moving and running, and I sort of saw him over there with the physios, and I thought, oh, that's a weird spot. Like, he's not getting his ankle rubbed at the moment. Like, that's been his, obviously, the part that's kept him out of training the last couple of days. I saw them, yeah, they're rubbing his leg. So then that sort of made me think that there might be something going on. That might have been something new. And then just sort of spoke to Liza after about sort of 15 minutes into the session. He was sort of saying that it was no good. So, yeah, just super gutted for him, obviously. He's obviously only young, so he's still got so much ahead of him. But it had been a big week for him. Probably not the start of how he would have liked in regards to not being on the field all that much. But, just super disappointed for him.
What about on the flip side, you play with Mark Nwangunituwase for the Kangaroos last year. What sort of impact can he have on the game?
Yeah, he's just one of those people that sort of just uplifts everyone around him. It's just sort of his personality, how he gets around training. But then ultimately, you've got to perform on the field. And that's all he's done, to be fair. Like, he's been out for a little while off the back of that syndesmosis, but he was outstanding against Canberra, which is a tough place to play down there. He just seems to finish tries that other people that just can't. So being able to have that on the edge and aerial threat as well. But no, super stoked for him. Obviously, he gutted for Casey in one hand, but then, yeah, super excited for Mark, and he'll do a wonderful job.
Isaiah, congratulations on being captain again. I love seeing you wear that blue jersey. When you guys went through your video review that you were talking about, obviously we understand from a Blues perspective what we can do better. When you broke down Queensland's game, were there any key opportunities that Laurie and you guys really identified that you can get at?
Yeah, there was. I probably won't say too many over the phone here, but I think getting the start right and actually sort of being able to try and put your plan A in place, like, we just weren't able to do that. We just didn't have the ball, we didn't have the field position. Mm. It just sort of took us too long, and they were able to sort of pivot and sort of keep chasing things, whereas, yeah, at the time, we just want to get field position back. So, yeah, ultimately, it's one thing saying you want to get the start right, but it's another thing doing. That's certainly our priority at the moment. You don't want to be putting yourself on the back foot like we did, and, you can't win a game at the start, but you can certainly lose, and we all but did, pretty much. So it was... we understand we need to be better.
Yeah, but you dug deep and you found a way to make it happen. So that's always a real positive.
Exactly,
and
right.
I know that a lot was made out of Ethan Strange in the lead up to game one and then particularly afterwards. But from a teammate perspective, how did you find him at camp? Because he just strikes me as somebody who is very confident, very competent, but fits in beautifully in that squad.
You know, he's about 10 metres in front of me at the moment, sitting at the airport, so I don't want to reference too much. He was outstanding for us. For someone at his age to come in off pretty much a day's notice and start at 5'8 for your state, I thought he was tremendous. So he's just one of those players that you can just see listening, learning on the run, but then ultimately when it comes to the field and training and ultimately playing, he was outstanding for us. So I thought he was one of our best. He attacked the game from the start, both with and without the ball. What a debut. So he's been outstanding. I was lucky enough to go away with him on the Ashes last year. And, what a player.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And, you know, obviously a huge disappointment for all Blues fans. Blake Brayley, with that broken arm, is unavailable. Thought he really did help change the complexion of the game when he came on. But a pretty handy replacement in Api Koroyasau, just as scheming around the ruck.
Yeah, they are. They're probably two of the most crafty hookers, I think, in the competition. So super gutted for Blake. He's probably another one there that, he probably didn't get the raps or the recognition he deserved from that game one, particularly on debut. He obviously set the tie up for Nate there to sort of put us in striking distance. But, gutted for him. It's just one of those things, isn't it, this time of the year that there's so much going on. You still go back to Clubland and perform, and then, he comes away with that broken arm. So, I was just gutted for him. You could see how much it meant for him in the Blues jersey. But then, Abby's been outstanding for us. So, probably hasn't played as much Origin as what you would have thought, but every time he has, he's been outstanding, and he'll do a wonderful job as well.
I know there's not a question about Nathan Cleary you wouldn't have been asked and answered over the years, and you've ridden through every high and low with him. But what did it mean to him that second half of Origin 1? Because he's, bizarrely had a lot of critics at Origin level. He's done just about everything in the game, and there was just so reminiscent of that second half where he pulled the 40-20, scored the try of a certain grand final, another huge moment he's had over the years. Did you see something that it meant extra special to him, the way he contributed to the win?
No, I don't think so. I dare say, I think he understands that at that level, rightly or wrongly, I think wrongly, but if you lose, it sort of falls back on the halfback more than it should. So I've been fortunate enough to have been able to see him at the peak of his powers, and it's no surprise to me. But, yeah, it was just nice to see him have those moments at that level. He gets criticised, I think, too much. But, yeah, ultimately, it's a results-driven business, and it's all about winning. So, it's it was just nice to see that. I think he's had a handful of sort of man-of-the-match awards in that arena, but no one sort of talks about that. But, yeah, it was nice to see him when the chips were down. He was the one sort of attacking the game and come up with some huge plays that... Yeah, I don't think anyone's... It's not surprising anyone anymore, I don't think. He's been doing it for such a long time. But, yeah, I think it was just certainly nice just to keep a few people quiet over this last couple of weeks.
And just finally, Isaiah, how important is it that you look up at the scoreboard, you know, half an hour in at the MCG and you're not down 20-0? Because that's been the case the last three Origin games.
Yeah, it'll certainly be nice. It's not nice if you see it at NRL level, let alone Origin level. But, ultimately, yeah, it's all about that. You want to know at the start, making sure that, yeah, at least it's a 50-50 contest, and that should be where you're at your fittest, not at your freshest, and the intensity's at its high. So you're certainly putting yourself on the back foot like we have over those last little things, and you certainly don't want it to become a trend. So obviously, yeah, we've missed the mark those last few games, but ultimately it's this group here that can change that, so we're looking forward to doing it.
Have you or had any conversations one-on-one with Laurie about that start and why it has gone so wrong in the past couple of games?
Yeah, it's all been sort of different ways. Like I think was it the Perth game last year? I think we gave away about 7 or 8 penalties at the start of that game in the first half. I think we missed the mark in the decider, which is disappointing last year. And then this time around, it was just concentration errors in the ruck. So it's all happened in different ways. But yeah, ultimately, it's up to us and individual accountability to make sure you get that right. So yeah, it's been spoken about, but then you don't want to sort of harp on it too much and make boys tighten up as well. You still want to be able to play with a little bit of freedom. So just trying to find the balance there, and I think we've done a good job so far.
Good stuff, Isaiah. Much appreciative of your time today. Good luck in Origin too. We all can't wait to get down there, and you guys are boarding a plane in about 15 minutes. So thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
Go the Blues.
New South Wales captain Isaiah Yeo, join us.
Do you love rugby league? NRL Saturday on ABC Sport.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
30 years ago, New South Wales completed a clean sweep of the State of Origin series, winning twice at the Sydney Football Stadium in 1996 and once in Brisbane. It was an historic series for the Phil Gould coach Blues. They became the first Origin team to make it a three-game series with the same 17 players. Now, considering the news this week with Stephen Crichton and now Casey McLean ruled out of State of Origin at the MCG, it just shows how difficult that is. Rod Wishart, you remember, was a wonderful player for the Illawarra Steelers, for St George Illawarra, for New South Wales, and certainly for Australia. His test stats are ridiculous. 13 tries in 17 tests and 40 goals. His last game in the NRL came in the 1999 grand final loss to Melbourne. But Rod Wishart was on the wing for the Blues in 1996, having been a part of State of Origin since 1990, the year after making his first grade debut. 22 Origins in all. So let's take a trip down memory lane with one of rugby league's good guys, Gerringong's own Rod Wishart. How are you, Rod?
G'day, Andrew. I'm well, mate. And when you say 30 years since we won that series in 96, it's amazing.
I don't know about you, and I think we're the same age. It made me feel very old looking back on that, thinking, gosh, I remember that really clearly.
But, that certainly was a great series, and we came off the year before off getting beaten 3-0 too. So, but my whole experience in Origin from 1990 to 1998, I played every series. We won six and we lost three. So it wasn't a bad record for New South Wales, but it was really fond memories of that 96 because, yeah, we won 3-0.
Tell you what, Rod, plenty of Blues players over the last two decades would take that record, six series wins in 9 years.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think the 90s was a good period of time for New South Wales. Obviously, we had some great players, but Queensland had fantastic players too. They were really strong, hard games, and always fairly close. And definitely 96 was pretty much the same. Even though we won 3-0, they were all close games.
Now, in chats like this, you've actually got to go backwards to go forward. So I want to go back a little bit further
And you became the first Illawarra Steeler local junior to play for Australia. What does that mean to you, even now?
Oh, yeah, that means a lot. You know, coming from the South Coast, Gerringong, Group 7, and the support we get from Illawarra and the Illawarra Steelers and was fantastic. So to be able to, you know, be a representative of, and firstly play for Australia for the first time. There's been some great players come out of the Illawarra and South Coast, no doubt. But the first Illawarra Steeler to play for Australia was great. And then since then we got some, you know, some momentum going, and there's been quite a few since. So it was great to be the first.
I was talking to Ruwan Sims the other day. We've got to get back to Gerringong. We had a great day at Mick Cronin Oval a few years ago. I think you were out of town, but it was fantastic, and everyone was so welcoming. But I digress. In 1988, the year before you joined the Steelers, that was a big year for you too, wasn't it, with the opportunities you had for Country First, that were the days, and Southern Division.
Well, they were. That was a fairly sort of pathway that you really followed back in those days. That country rugby league was strong, and you still had those country versus city games. And I think I was sort of, that was an opportunity for me. It made me a mark in the game. And then I had a few other clubs that approached me after that to offer contracts. Steelers was one of them. And it was so easy to still live in a beautiful place like Gerringong, go half an hour up the road to play the best football comp in the world. So it was a pretty easy choice for me to choose the Illawarra Steelers, and I've had some fantastic years since then. So
in hindsight, were you surprised at how speedily you ascended up the ranks? You debuted for the Steelers in 89. I think you remember scoring a try in the midweek cup grand final against Brisbane, and the next year you're playing rep footy. It was quick.
It was, it was one of those things. You just you don't really think about it. You just try and get in there and just play the best football you can. The first year in '89, Ronnie Hilditch was the coach. We won two games that whole year, but in the midweek competition, the Panasonic Cup. We made the final, and it was a real memorable final. We got beaten against the Broncos, but we put in a great effort. But it certainly put myself and a few other sort of young local juniors from Illawarra on the map. And then going into 1990, the following year, I started to play some good football. And before I know it, I got picked in an Origin side. And sort of 18 months prior to that, I was just sort of finished playing for Gerringong, so it was a big step.
That's crazy.
For me. Yeah. And it sort of it surprises you sometimes. I never had, you know, massive goals. They were all sort of done by small increments, I guess. And then before you know it, you realise you can, you know, take it to the best in the game, and that's sort of how it sort of progressed.
1994, see, getting up to the 94 Kangaroo Tour, injuries had actually cost you a number of tests. I know you'd played test footy, but injuries had stuffed you around a little bit when it came to international footy. But boy, did you make up for it in 94. I mean, this is something that cannot possibly ever be repeated. When you break the Kangaroos' point-scoring record on that tour, 11 games, eight tries, 71 goals, 174 points. You broke Michael O'Connor's record from two tours earlier. That will never happen again. Do people like your young bloke even believe that you could score 174 points on a single tour these days?
Yeah, it was. I played on the end of some great footballers in that team in '94, I went for the ride, to be honest, and they scored a lot of tries under the post, which probably helped me a little bit as well, I've got to be honest. It was certainly a great period of time. It was the last Kangaroo tour of England and France, so many great memories. And so I look back and you know, with fond memories for sure.
All right. Now, to give what happened in 1996 context, we need to briefly discuss, as you touched on earlier, what happened in 1995 when Fatty's Nevilles defeated your Blues 3-0, often spoken about on this show. But how much did that burn in the veins heading into 96 as a team?
Oh, without a doubt, I think we knew we had opportunities in 95 and we just couldn't put them, put the points on the board. Credit to Queensland and Fatty's job of getting a team together, and they were united and they played some great football. I think Gus Gould probably took it upon himself to make sure that he didn't leave any stone unturned. There was a real good bunch of guys for New South Wales. I had some great camaraderie, and we played for each other, and we really made sure that we understood that we're playing for our state, and it wasn't just us, it was the whole state that was behind us, and gravitated to some good football. As I said, they were pretty close games.
Yeah.
But I think the first game was up in Brisbane, and we won that. So that was the key, I think, to win that first game.
Do you know my main memory from that, Rod? This was in a year of unlimited interchange, and Big Lazo, Glenn Lazarus, played all 80 minutes. No one could believe it at the time.
Yeah, it was. That was amazing. I mean, he was a Trojan, and he just didn't stop working. And I can remember one game, Lazo's off his feet. It was three quarters way through the game, and Lazo's come over to my wing, and he couldn't talk. He was so exhausted. I said, Lazo, get back in the middle, mate, where you belong. This is my wing. I wouldn't have said that to Lazo in the past. But it was only because he couldn't talk I was able to say that to him.
But hey, timing's everything.
He was just amazing. And the rest of the forwards pack were good. That's where the foundation was really laid, and we had a great set of backs, and we scored some tries, just enough to win all three games. So it was good.
Joey was playing halfback, Andrew Johns, and I think Jeff Toovey played hooker in that series and was player of the series. But you won the first game 14-6. You head to Sydney. You scored a try just before half time in game two. Queensland forward Craig Greenhill created history, becoming the first player to be sent off in an Origin game. That was about midway through the second half. An 18-6 win. Do you remember what that was like for the team when the siren sounded and the series was in the bag?
We put some points on the board. We just had to make sure we held them out. And when we did, we're all exhausted. It was a bit of a relief. But we still... You know, we had a meeting after the game. We still wanted to win 3-0 based on the fact that Queensland did it to us the year before. So
yes.
the job wasn't finished. And in game three, we got off to a pretty good start as well. And then Queensland progressively came back, and we won the game by just the 1 point.
It was a Freddie field goal, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was funny because Freddie kicked this field goal in the first half.
Yes.
I was thinking, well, wait up, what are you thinking there, Freddie? But it was probably the point of the match that was most important.
Yeah, they did storm home because it's amazing how many people are still bluffed into thinking if a series 2-0, the third game doesn't matter. Tell the players that. Queensland obviously were desperate to avoid it. You guys were desperate to inflict it.
No, we was look. I've got to talk a little bit more about Gus because he sort of orchestrated the whole lot from the time we first turned up into camp in the first game. He'd fine tuned everything, and he wanted to make sure that the same didn't happen, and he knew that we had the team to be able to do it. It was just about to get us a little bit focused and understand who we're playing for. And we did it. And I think, you know, all credit to Gus and the other coaching team as well.
Talking to Rod Wishart, veteran of 22 Origin games for New South Wales. I'll let you go on a tick, Rod. But can you believe 30 years on that you only had 17 players for an entire series? That does seem unbelievable.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, it is. In sort of this day and age, even then there was quite a few injuries. So for us to go through the three games without any injuries was remarkable. But it was probably one of the reasons why we did win 3-0. We were very cohesive. We looked after each other off the field in camps. We bonded really well. So the fact that we didn't have to worry about any new thing come into the team was definitely a bonus for us.
All right. And finally, New South Wales won game one this year after trailing 20-0. What's going to happen at the MCG on Wednesday?
Well, hopefully we can repeat the 3-0. And look, the second game is the important one. You've got to get the series. And I think New South Wales showed on the field they've got the spirit. They understand what it means to put the Blues jumper on, and there's a whole state behind them. And the momentum's in their favour, but they have to start off a lot probably better than what they did in the first game, in the first half. But I've got every bit of confidence that New South Wales can not just win the series, but hopefully do a 3-0.
All right, Rod, great memories, mate. Lovely to catch up with you as always. Love to everyone in Gerringong. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of this year's series, 30 years after you guys won 3-0. Thanks, Rod.
No worries, Andrew. I'm just about to just pop up and watch the local Gerringong side play this afternoon. So good to talk to you, mate.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.